Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Coming up on the broadcast today, an ice cream shop, some helium, and the tallest building in this half of the world. We'll make it all make sense for you. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Monday, the 29th of April. Good to have you with us, as always. It is 6 months to the day since Hurricane Sandy hit New York and New Jersey. And to mark the occasion, or better yet, to mark the recovery from the occasion, Housing Secretary Sean Donovan and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie announced another $1.8 billion in aid today, money for homeowners, renters, and small businesses. Aggie Roberts runs the Music Man. It's a singing ice cream shop down on the Jersey Shore. Aggie, it's good to have you with us.
Good to talk to you.
I feel like maybe we need a little orientation here. Where exactly are you in relation to the New York metropolitan area?
I'm in Lavalette, New Jersey, which is between, well, New York City and Atlantic City. We're right in the center on the coast.
Right on the Jersey Shore, as it were.
Right on the Jersey Shore. Our building is one block from the beach.
Tell me about your building. How does it look today, say, 6 months ago today?
Oh, my goodness. 6 months ago today, it was 4.5 feet of water surrounded it. We had lost all the contents in our building, and we have a boardwalk in our town. That whole boardwalk busted apart, so we had buildings on either side of us and behind us that kind of protected us.
Are you 100% back now? I mean, I'm looking at your website. It's got a little countdown clock to the second for how many days left till you open. 25 days, 8 hours, 23 minutes, and 29 seconds. But anyway.
Yes. Our opening night for the summer is normally Friday of Memorial Weekend. That's when the Jersey Shore really comes alive.
How much is left to be done before you can open the doors, Aggie?
Wow.
a lot, I guess, huh?
No, not at all. We've made such strides. We're going to use every moment until opening night just because we have the time. If we had to open tonight, I could if I had product. I'm kind of holding off with my product since I am an ice cream shop. But all my counters and dipping freezers, they're all delivered, and we are a performing restaurant. So our cast moves in on the 16th of May, and then we start rehearsals for Memorial Weekend.
Do you have the cast all selected? And
we do. We do. We're so excited. We were very fortunate that a lot of people that were with us last summer made the commitment right after the storm that they were coming back.
How long is it going to take? How far into the summer are you going to have to get before you are sort of, well, you're never going to be made whole, but before you're back to where you would have been before the storm?
We don't know what is in store for us because we don't really know about housing situations. You know, the Jersey Shore is, I was born and raised Jersey, and we would save all year long to vacation for the 2 weeks out of the summer. A lot of people are the same. So, and a lot of those homes were destroyed. And a lot of those homes are not rebuilt yet. To say when we're going to be made whole, I'm thankful that I'm opening.
Aggie Roberts is the co-founder of The Music Man. It's a singing ice cream shop on the Jersey Shore. He's in Lavalette, New Jersey. Aggie, thanks a bunch and best of luck, huh?
Thank you so much.
My guess is that when Aggie does open his doors in a couple of weeks for Memorial Day, there are going to be a lot of balloons involved, which is a slightly tortured but not entirely irrelevant segue to our next story. It's about helium. Yes, it is for balloons, but the noble gas also has big science and industrial uses as well. Washington, that is the federal government, has been in the helium business for decades. It's been trying to get out for almost as long, but somehow just can't. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong explains.
This is a serious subject, but even congressmen can't stop themselves from puns about the federal helium program floating along, and what goes up never comes down. We at Marketplace would never do that. We go straight to the history of the program. To the 1920s and 30s, the Frank Capra film Dirigible portrayed government management of helium for military blimps meant to counter the Germans' Hindenburg. But the technology crashed in the film.
SOS light! Ship cracking up!
As it did in real life. But not the federal helium program. In fact, the government stockpiled the stuff in the 1960s. And now, geologist Chip Grote says the element serves at least two big uses beyond balloons: research and cooling MRI machines.
It creates a low-temperature environment in which a lot of, particularly the atomic physicists, experiment with matter. And in the MRI case, that low-temperature environment is extremely important.
By the 90s, Congress tried to wind down the Strategic Helium Reserve, but then the world started running out. Penn State physicist Moses Chan blames artificially low prices the Fed charged helium suppliers.
Those companies can buy the federal helium gas at a relatively low price. There's less incentive to develop it.
So in comes Congress to the rescue again. The helium program that was supposed to die this year is poised for extension, and that may open the system up to a true market price. Whatever happens, helium supplies will stay tight. So there's new interest in conservation and alternative sources, say, for making your voice go all Alvin and the Chipmunks squeaky. I won't do it, but there's an app. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
I totally would have paid to hear him do it. Come on, right? All right, here we go. Two things to keep an eye on as the week unfolds. Number one, we seem to be in for yet another five-day run of Wall Street not being able to make up its mind. All sunshine and light on Wall Street today after the ups and downs of last week. Item two, the Federal Reserve Bank of the United States. They meet tomorrow and Wednesday. Not that they're going to change anything, but there will be much tea leaf reading going on. I promise you that. As for equities, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. You hear a lot about companies looking overseas to find cheap labor, but there is a more than adequate supply right here at home. A joint investigation by Marketplace and ProPublica finds that many of the country's biggest companies are using immigrant labor at their warehouses near Chicago, and that often those workers have to pay to get the work, which then takes their salaries down below minimum wage. Michael Graybell from ProPublica and our Jeff Tyler did the reporting for our Wealth and Poverty Desk. Here's Jeff.
So it's about 4:30 in the morning out here in Chicago. We are standing outside of a white van, and it's freezing outside, so most of the people have already taken a spot in the van.
The passengers are all Latino. Many are undocumented. They're headed to minimum wage jobs in the suburbs. They'll pack stuffed animals at a warehouse 40 minutes away. One of the nation's biggest temp staffing companies signs their checks, but recruiting the workers and transporting them to the job site, that's handled by an underground labor broker called a Reitero. In our investigation, we found that the Reiteros control access to work from beginning to end.
There's lots of work at Fresh Express, packing lettuce, men and women. Be ready at 5 in the morning.
That Reitero lists the available temp jobs on his outgoing phone message. And even though it's against the law, some Reiteros charge workers a fee to fill out a job application, like 20-year-old Maria Martinez.
For the application, I had to put like $4.
Many workers don't have cars, so they depend on the Reitero to get to and from the job. But that can be a scary proposition. I asked a small, middle-aged worker named Estella if she has confidence in the drivers.
The drivers drive very crazy. Sometimes they drive a very high speed. It is not safe.
She says some drivers even drink on the job. Drivers are supposed to have a commercial license. Many don't have any license. Take this driver.
Tiene una licencia para manejar.
Sí tengo, pero no la voy a sacar.
He said that he has a license, but he wouldn't show it to me. The rides are the main way that Riteros make money. The Riteros charge $8 a day for a ride round trip. That's a lot for temp workers who make just over $8 an hour. And workers say if you don't pay for a ride, the Riteros won't find you a job. Employment lawyer Chris Williams represented a guy who lives in Joliet, south of Chicago.
We had a worker who went to a staffing agency, was told, no, if you want to work at this staffing agency, you have to drive up to Chicago, go to Little Village, and meet at someone's garage. He went there, he waited, he got on a van, and they drove him back to Joliet to a factory to work in Joliet, Illinois. And then at the end of the day, he had to drive back in the van and then get back in his car and drive back to Joliet. And he had to pay for the ride in order to do that.
Williams says forcing temp workers to pay for rides is illegal under Illinois law, and if the money for the ride is deducted from a worker's check, forcing the pay below minimum wage, Williams says that's illegal too. It's Friday evening in Little Village, the end of a long week. Workers come here to 26th Street, where Riteros distribute paychecks at check-cashing stores. They're charged 1 to 2% to cash their checks. And sometimes they're even cheated out of the change.
They keep all the pennies.
Many workers say they've been ripped off for more than pennies, getting cheated out of the hours worked. I found 20-year-old Maria Martinez selling fruit from a food cart on the sidewalk. She used to work with the Riteros until she didn't get paid.
They just had us back and forth going to the office and to the Ritero, and that was it. And your money, they didn't give it to you back.
So how much money did you lose?
300, which is like a week of work, 40 hours.
They didn't pay you?
No, they didn't pay me.
I spoke with Eugenio Aguilar, the Ritero Martinez blamed for her missing check. But Aguilar says any missing payments are the result of a clerical error by the temp staffing agency.
The companies use a supervisor. Sometimes the supervisor forgets to record the names of the workers. That's why sometimes they don't get paid.
I met Aguilar in front of his apartment building. Nothing special for Little Village. I asked him if he's getting rich as a Ritero.
No, just enough to eat.
I met another Ritero at this church in a two-story brick building in a residential neighborhood. Bertin Salgado is also a reverend. He says he doesn't get any money from the staffing agencies.
The temporary staffing offices don't even pay me anything. Sometimes they don't even know me.
Salgado sees himself as helping the community.
El Ritero existe porque es una necesidad.
He says the Ritero exists because it's a necessity. Several workers I interviewed said the same thing. Without the Riteros, they say, who's going to hire a middle-aged woman with no education, no car, and no ability to speak English? The Riteros represent their lifeline to employment, though it comes at a big price that they can't avoid paying. In Chicago, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, Jeff explains how the Ritero business model benefits American companies, and there is much more from our joint investigation with ProPublica on our website. It's marketplace.org. It was windy in New York City today, so the architectural news out of Manhattan has been delayed. This was supposed to be the day that the spire was installed on the new World Trade Center, making it the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. Once it finally does happen, the thing is going to top out at a neatly symbolic 1,776 feet. But what about the 104 floors below the spire, not to mention all the other new buildings around it? It is a tricky thing to tie that part of New York to occupancy rates and rents per square foot. But Wall Street is a business proposition after all. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has the story.
One World Trade Center already looms over Manhattan as the city's tallest building. But Robert Beauregard, professor of urban planning at Columbia, says it stands out for another reason, too.
This is a project wasn't based on real estate fundamentals, right? It wasn't a project based upon market analysis, supply and demand. It was a politically driven project.
He says the rebirth of the World Trade Center complex is an attempt to buck the increasingly residential character of this area of Manhattan.
The implication, I think, is it's going to take a while to lease up the space.
Construction was paused on two of the five World Trade Center buildings because there weren't enough committed tenants. The centerpiece building, One World Trade Center, is only about half spoken for. So far, only one building is complete and full of renters. Michael Chenault is with real estate firm Jones Lang LaSalle. He's been advising the Port Authority on the development of One World Trade Center.
It has been a bit of a challenge, more so because of the recession and the financial meltdown, than it has been due to tenant concerns.
As the economy rebounds, he says there's plenty of time to fill up the rest. One World Trade Center doesn't actually open for another 2 years. And those tenants will be very different from before. Darren McQuillan is a spokesman for Silverstein Properties, which developed several of the other World Trade Center buildings.
Before 9/11, many of the companies downtown were in the so-called fire sector, which is finance, insurance, and real estate. Today, we've seen that companies that are moving downtown are much more creative, technology-oriented, nonprofits. You're seeing ad agencies and marketing firms.
One World Trade Center's anchor tenant is Condé Nast, publisher of Vogue magazine. It'll occupy a quarter of the soaring tower. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor for Marketplace.
Coming up.
They're so driven by greed that they do things that serve their interest and the bank's interest rather than the customer's interest.
More banks in Britain, but first, let's do the numbers. A new government in Italy and good U.S. housing news rallied Wall Street today. The Dow Industrial surged 106 points, about 0.7%, closed at 14,818. The Nasdaq gained 27 points, 0.8%, finished at 3307. The S&P 500 tacked on 11 points, almost 0.75%, ended things at 1593, a new all-time high, by the by. Technology stocks powered up the broad-based rally. Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard each jumped more than 2.5% today. S&P 500 heavyweight Apple picked up 3% as it moved toward its much-anticipated bond sale. And the companies that will rate those bonds did all right as well. Moody's gained more than 8% today after settling a lawsuit alleging it misled investors about the safety of risky debt. Its rival Standard & Poor's settled a similar lawsuit. Shares of its parent company, McGraw-Hill, upgraded 2.75% today. Financial shares ran the gamut of gains and losses. JPMorgan Chase split the difference, closed basically flat. Morgan Stanley up 3.75% today. Bank of America off 0.3%. Bond prices fell slightly. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.67%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Federal Reserve begins a two-day meeting on interest rates. The Conference Board releases its monthly Consumer Confidence Index looking at April. And high school students recite poems in the nation's capital at the Poetry Out Loud National Finals. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. They didn't, as the saying goes, build Rome in a day. And the same could be said for Italy when it comes to choosing a new government. They got one over the weekend. Its leader, Enrico Letta, is his name. Well, it had a coalition government that took about 2 months to put together, which might be almost as long as it's been since we've asked this question.
What's up?
What's up?
What's up, Europe?
Bethany Bell is with the BBC in Rome. Bethany, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Is there out in the cafes and the trattorias, if you will, a sense of relief now that there's a government, or is it business as usual?
There is a sense of relief, I think, for many people. But, you know, they'll be watching very carefully to see what this government does, because there is a deep sense of cynicism here. And politicians here are being seen very much as people who are money-grabbing and not working for the good of the country. Mr. Letta's hoping to change that.
Mr. Letta has said, though, well, he's inferred anyway, that he's gonna move away from austerity, right? He's going to delay some tax increases. He's going to go see European partners and talk to them more about pro-growth policies. I mean, that's the way he's going, right?
Yes, and he told Parliament in a speech today that austerity just wasn't enough, and growth can't wait any longer. And so that's something moving away from the European Union's focus on austerity. And he's also said he's going to put jobs as his number one priority, because unemployment here is quite high, especially among the young.
Along those lines, I'm surprised to note, or I was before I came in the studio, that the Italian stock market was up today a couple of percent. Italian borrowing costs are down below where they've been in 2-3 years. But that doesn't necessarily correlate with the Italian economy, does it?
No, I mean, just the response of the markets today shows how relieved certainly the financial circles are that there is a government. Italy's got incredibly big problems it's got to deal with, not least unemployment. There are lots and lots of people here without jobs. It's really hard to do business here. Businesses are going bankrupt every day. And, you know, whether or not this government has got what it takes to pull it out of recession is the big question.
What strikes you about this one? Is there something about this moment that portends either ill or good?
Everybody thought that this election in February would turn out very differently from it did. Mm-hmm. It was extremely inconclusive. It showed that Italians in general were really fed up with the way that politics was being held, and also shows how much Italians are hurting because of the austerity measures. Now, if Mr. Letta does succeed in getting through some of these reforms and in keeping this government together, that will be a huge achievement. If he doesn't, then Italy looks as though it's heading for very much more chaotic politics in future.
Bethany Bell with the BBC in Rome. Bethany, thanks very much.
Thank you.
One could well imagine, in the wake of a banking crisis like the world's seen the past 5 years, that the last thing any country would want is more banks. Yet that is exactly what the British government is calling for. The UK's main financial regulator has decided to make it easier to start a bank over there. Approval time has been shortened from 2 years to 6 months. Initial capital requirements have been cut as well, none of which is necessarily a sign that once a bank's up and running, it will be less rigorously regulated. But the government does hope many more banks will set up shop, and an American entrepreneur might be among the first to benefit. Here's our man in London, Stephen Beard.
Opening a new bank? How about this for starters? This was how Metro Bank launched its latest branch in Britain, with pop music, stilt walkers and performing dogs. The Brits aren't used to such razzmatazz at the opening of a new bank. In fact, says Metro's American boss, Vernon Hill, the Brits are not used to a new bank, period.
Metro Bank is the first new retail bank in Britain since 1830, and it's here to bring choice and change.
With innovations like this coin-counting machine and 7 days a week opening, Hill hopes to shake up Britain's retail banking market, highly concentrated by American standards.
There are still 7,000 banks in America, roughly six in Britain.
The UK regulator wants to break up this oligopoly by making it much easier to start a bank here. Hill says the UK does need many more smaller banks for the sake of the country's small businesses.
Big banks in general do not well serve small business.
And there's no shortage of small British business owners who agree.
The banks are starving small businesses in this country, and we are the lifeblood of this country.
Jeremy Rowe runs a small holiday cottage business. He says small firms now find it all but impossible during the downturn to raise finance from the banks. But he has a much more serious complaint about Britain's main lenders and their staff.
They're so driven by greed that they do things that serve their interest and the bank's interest rather than the customer's interest.
Before the crisis, he took out a loan from his local bank. He was strongly advised, as an insurance against interest rates rising, to buy a product called an interest rate swap. He didn't fully understand it. When rates fell, he was left with a bill approaching $750,000. Along with 1,200 other small businesses similarly affected, Rowe has launched a national campaign called Bully Banks.
The banks are out of control, to the detriment of the economy, to the detriment of the society, and the detriment of their customers.
Welcome to Metro Bank in Guildford. Grand opening today. Come in and have a look around.
Britain's newest bank is hoping to win many disgruntled customers from the big dominant lenders. The regulator, too, is hoping that by lowering the barriers to entry, a flood of small banks will help curb the abuses by raising the competitiveness of the sector.
It's notoriously very hard to get into, so it's right that the government should be helping new entrants to get in.
George Hay of Reuters Breaking Views applauds the attempt to crack open retail banking, but he says don't expect an instant flood of new banks in Britain.
The outlook for retail banks in the UK, especially with the economy doing so badly, isn't particularly rosy.
Britain's big existing lenders seem certain to rule the roost for some years to come. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note on the way out today, which comes with the disclosure that I'm a notoriously bad emailer. I just kind of let things sit in my inbox, not wanting either to deal with or disappoint whoever sent me whatever note is there. Turns out I read in Slate today that that might be just because I am too nice. Seriously, a study by Contactually, which calls itself a referral marketing platform, says negative people are 36% more likely to respond to an email within 24 hours than we nicer people are. I have no idea how statistically rigorous this thing is, but I'm going with it. We've got a link to it on our website. It's marketplace.org. And that is the show for today from APM. Today, the Dow surged 106 points, about 0.7%. The NASDAQ up 27 points, 0.8%. The S&P 500 added 11 points, 0.7%. Our producers include Bridget Bodner, Gina Delvac, Mary Dew, Nancy Fargali, Millie Jefferson, John Ketchum, Jolie Myers, and Chow Tu. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.